Check. 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 I think we're getting AG. Okay, good. Folks, we're going to get started here in a minute. I'm waiting for AGP to give us the word that we're live, and then we'll do some openings and ready to go. Okay, so I got the word from AGP that we're live and we're ready to go. I know everybody's getting settled in, and we're also getting out some more chairs, so we're doing that. Thanks. Welcome, everybody. Glad to have everybody here for this turnout. So I'll go through some of the formalities of the meeting. This is the Water Reclamation Facility public forum, and just for the viewers home, I'll go through some of the process. This meeting is being held on April 25th, 2018. We're starting at 6:30. The meeting will be going to 8:30, and we're located at the Vets Hall for all our viewers at home. So we do have a quorum of council. We have Councilmember Davis, Councilmember McPherson, Councilmember Makowiecki is putting up chairs, and Councilmember Heading is also there putting on chairs. So we do have a quorum, and we'll call the meeting to order. And with that, I'm going to turn it over. I wanted to thank the League of Women Voters for being here tonight, and we should all thank them. Thank you. Thanks. They'll be moderating the questions tonight. And I'll turn it over to our city manager. He'll go through some of the points and processes that we're going to go through tonight. And council is going to be sitting in the audience amongst all of you. And we look forward to all your questions. And I want to thank all our staff and everybody for coming tonight. So I'm going to put the mic down for the League of Women Voters. And then...
Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for coming out today. We really appreciate that, that you're taking time out of your busy lives where you could be doing a lot of other things because you're here, like we're here, to discuss a very important project. The proposed Water Reclamation Facility Project, or WRF, as it's commonly known, is a major topic of discussion and equally a major topic of concern for our community members. The current cost estimates for the complete project at this time is in the neighborhood of $150 million. That's a substantial figure for a community of our size, no doubt. Community members are rightfully worried and concerned about the financial impacts of the project, particularly in light of the fact that the rising costs in just generally in SLO County and Morro Bay is a real thing. And this is adding to that worry for folks about the affordability in this community. And that's something I take to heart, City Council takes to heart, and our staff does. The project is moving into a very critical phase, as you all know, as we're really closely approaching getting a much better understanding of the true costs of the project, which will ultimately inform the anticipated rate increases. And we felt it was really important to provide an opportunity for the public to get an update on the project and also to provide input to the city. What I'd like to do tonight really is to provide information. The history of this project, how we got here, the goals and the major components of the project, and how you can stay engaged in this process and ultimately participate in the decision about this project and the rate increases. So tonight we have a panel of staff. Myself, Eric Caceres is our new program manager. Rob Blivick is the public works director. Joe Pannone is our city attorney. Joe Miller is our utility division manager. And then we have Harvey Packard from the Regional Water Quality Control Board, the section manager for this area. So you'll be hearing from us, but briefly. Really, this is about you as a community. This is an opportunity for us to hear from you and for you to ask those hard questions, which is why we've invited the League of Women Voters to help moderate the Q&A. They're real pros at this. They know what they're doing. They know how to facilitate robust question and answer segments. And we are just so thrilled that they're willing to help us tonight. So I've said enough. I want to turn this over to our new program manager, Eric Caceres, who was just recently brought on. He brings a wealth of experience and knowledge in project management and also wastewater and water reclamation projects. And really the point of Eric Caceres and his team is to ensure that we get the best project for the best price. And so with that, I would like to turn the mic over to Eric, and we can begin the presentation. Thank you all so much.
Good evening. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate the introduction. So want to just jump into the presentation here, and as we mentioned, really the focus is going to be a little bit on providing some context and some background information, and we can move into more of the question and answer and discussion component of the evening. So just a quick agenda. We're going to do a brief presentation here. A couple of things we want to focus on. One is history. We're going to run through kind of a chronological history of where the project has been and where the treatment plant has been essentially since it was built back in 1954. We'll talk a little bit about some of the project goals and how that history informed those goals. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the project as it's currently been envisioned and the specific components of that. We're going to hit funding and permitting a little bit as we talk about next steps and some of the ongoing efforts that staff and the technical team are currently working on. And then we're going to talk about a little bit about the 218 process. Joe's going to speak a little bit about the specifics of that. And then Mr. Packard's going to give us an update from the regional board. So I want to start off by having Joe Miller here talk a little bit about some of the history of the treatment plant itself.
Thanks, Eric. The existing treatment facility is operated jointly by Morro Bay and Cayucas through a partnership. The plant discharges approximately 1 million gallons of water each day into the ocean. Up until this past March, the plant has been operating under a discharge permit that included a 301H waiver, which allowed for a relaxation of our secondary treatment standards. In March, a new discharge permit went into effect. That discharge permit no longer allows the relaxation of secondary standards, so we're under a full secondary treatment permit as of the beginning of March. The treatment plant has a long history of providing 24-hour service 7 days a week, but as such, a lot of the components are over 65 years old and nearing or at the end of their useful life. And the plant's physical location makes it susceptible to coastal hazards and challenging to maintain in that coastal environment.
Great. Thanks, Joe. So we're going to move on and talk a little bit again about kind of the history and outline of or a timeline of the project. As most people understand, the project, it's about a 15-year timeline to get from where things started to kind of morph and change in 2013 to where we are currently in 2018. And what we tried to do is to break this down into kind of manageable different eras of the project. And so we'll start off with, you know, the treatment plant itself was built in 1954 and underwent significant upgrades in 1976 and 1984. So those are some of the major kind of historical milestones of the treatment facility itself. And really things began to change back in 2003, and really that the initiative for that change was the regional board sending a letter to, at the time, the Morro Bay and Cayuga Sanitary District, letting them know that the 301H waiver was going away and it was going to require some upgrades to the treatment plant to be compliant with those future discharge regulations. So that was back in 2003. And then in June of that same year, the city and the district submitted an application to the regional board to renew their permit under that 301H waiver. So kind of the 301H waiver era is how we're referring to that.
A little too far.
Sorry. So back in 2000, the next kind of phase of the treatment plant project was between the years of about 2006 and 2011. So really in 2006 is when the process of upgrading the treatment plant significantly was initiated with the completion of the The previous facility master plan that was completed in 2007, which really looked to upgrade the treatment plant in its current location. In April of 2006, the city and district agreed to shorten negotiated time schedule for the upgrade project from about 9.5 years to 8 years based on input from the community. And then really the time between about 2007 and 2010 was when the city and the district really focused on replacing the existing wastewater treatment plant in its current site. So the first iteration of that was looking at kind of reusing some components of the existing facility, building some new components, and then moving that up to an area adjacent to the existing treatment plant and looking at doing the upgrades in that location because of concerns with flooding and other things. So in December of 2010, when the draft EIR was circulated, it triggered a letter from the Coastal Commission staff indicating no support for the project in its current location. So that was back in December of 2010. So really that initiated this next phase of the project, which runs from about 2011 to 2015. So right around 2011-2012 time period, the city and the district were kind of going down two separate paths. There were some studies that were conducted evaluating some alternative site locations. But at the same time, the EIR for the project in its current location and upgrade at its current site was being moved forward as well. So two of those things were happening concurrently. We get a big shift in January of 2013 when the Coastal Commission denies a permit to rebuild the facility or upgrade the facility at its current site. And that really changed the course and the direction of the project itself. In December of 2013, the site options report looked at a number of different sites, 17 different sites. Ultimately, that was shortlisted down to 7 sites and really honed in on a couple of different sites, one in the Moro Valley and one in the Choro Valley. Between May and December of 2014, reports were put together that recommended the Moro Valley site, but also gave consideration to the Choro Valley site. And then the city also went through and put forth a study looking at a regional project with CMC that was ultimately deemed to not be a cost-effective option to pursue at that time. So then we move into we're calling kind of the post-CSD or post-Cayucas phase of the project. In April 2015, Cayucas made the decision that they were going to pursue their own project, and obviously that has an impact on the path that we've arrived to today. In February 2016, additional site analysis was done, and that was really sparked by some neighborhood concerns in the Moro Valley. And in May 2016, it was determined that the South Bay Boulevard site was the favorable site because it was the most achievable, or the project was most achievable in the 5-year time frame at that location. So that decision was made. And in June 2016, the City Council took action and selected the South Bay Boulevard site as the location for the detailed studies, primarily the facility master plan that was done, as well as to move forward the EIR. So that was looked at as a preferred location. So then we move into another phase of the project, which is 2016 to, it says present here, but really kind of within 6 months of where we are today, which we're calling the project definition phase. So there's two major documents that were done in that time period. In November 2016, the draft facility master plan was completed and set forth the direction for many of the treatment facilities and many of the other components of the treatment plant that we're going to move forward. And then in March 2017, the draft master reclamation plan was completed as well. Yeah, that was partially grant funded. And then April 2017, the draft master plan, one of the main elements of that draft master plan was to come up with conceptual or budgetary cost estimates for those facilities, and then also marry that with the master reclamation plan, which was also coming up with cost estimates for a preferred project on the reclamation side of things. Those two things together were what informed the draft rate study and got us to where we are today with the cost that Scott mentioned earlier of about $150 million project. And as everybody understands, it's a large number, and so that really moved us into kind of another phase of the project. So that gives everybody a sense of kind of the historical and where we've been. A couple things to take away there. If we look at a high level, what are some of the big takeaways that we take from that historical timeline? How did we get to where we are? One is definitely regulatory factors. The upgrade to the treatment plant was ultimately triggered by the EPA's 301H waiver and the fate of that waiver and what it was going to mean for treatment requirements and the ability of the existing treatment plant to meet those future requirements. So that's one takeaway. The other one is permitting challenges. So the treatment plant was upgrade was moving along in its current site. And really what changed that course was the determination by the Coastal Commission in 2013 to deny the coastal development permit. So those two things are important. I think a third one to note is also the 2015 decision of Cayucas to take on their own project and essentially not participate in this project. It does have impacts in terms of the cost of the project from an economy of scale standpoint, so it's something I wanted to mention here. There are some other drivers that we wanted to mention weren't necessarily highlighted in the overall timeline that we discussed, but drought is one. A drought in 2011 definitely heightened the awareness of reclamation and the importance of that to the project. The city's making a sizable investment. The importance of reclamation was definitely highlighted there. Another thing that's come out, obviously, from the work that was done in 2016 is the high cost of the project. And so cost impacts are something that's very important and are definitely driving decisions and thoughts about the project. And then citizen input. There's been a significant amount of citizen input. And that citizen input, along with all these other drivers, are really what led to the development of the project goals. So there's about seven main project goals for the project that were adopted. And I've highlighted a couple of the main points here. Some of them are a little bit long, but there's a couple things that I wanted to just hit home on. And the first one really has to do with minimizing costs and minimizing impacts to the ratepayer. That's one of the key tenets of the city's goals for the project. The next one, it kind of goes back to that citizen input driver I mentioned earlier, which is communicating the progress of this WRF process or this program to the community, all aspects of the project, from the status, milestones, budget, cost, all of those things, and that's a key tenet of the goals as well. The next one is to produce tertiary disinfected wastewater. That was something that its roots go back to some of the early work in 2006, 2007, and that's one of the things that carries forward as one of the big project goals. The next has to do, again, this has to do with recycled water, but in the form of reclamation and looking at direct potable or indirect or direct potable use of that of the treated effluent in order to augment the city's water supply. Again, going back to the drought considerations and some of the changes in regulations and other things that had happened over the course of the project. And then the other one is look at ways to make the project attractive to help secure either grant funding or other low interest funding. Design the facility to maximize the impacts from or minimize the impacts, of emerging contaminants of emerging concern. Again, something that goes back to some of the elements that were highlighted in early documents back in 2006 and 2007, and then ensure compatibility with neighboring land uses. So that kind of summarizes the goals of the project. So timeline, elements in that timeline influence the project goals, and then how do those two things get us to where we are today with the project definition that we have? So we'll start a little bit with the water reclamation facility. So again, the draft master reclamation plan, which outlines the components of the new project, was completed in December 2016 and included full tertiary treatment for the entirety of the wastewater flow that would go to the ocean, as well as advanced treatment for potable reuse, as I mentioned earlier. Some of the other key aspects of the project site, unlike the existing site, it's outside of the area of coastal hazards. And also, one of the reasons why that site was preferred is there was minimal aesthetic impacts to surrounding neighbors and others. So that's on the facility plan side of the house, and then we turn over to the reclamation plan, which was completed about 6 months later. That reclamation plan evaluated a number of different recycled water uses, not just potable reuse, which is the preferred alternative at this point, but also non-potable reuse as well. Based on that evaluation, potable reuse ranked highest. One, it had the largest water supply benefit for the community, and then also from a unit cost standpoint, it ranked highest among the alternatives that were looked at. And just to give everybody a sense of the magnitude of the potable reuse effort, it could potentially offset about 80% of the city's existing water demand. City uses about 1,000 acre feet a year now, and preliminary estimates of the water supply benefit of a potable reuse project is around 800 acre feet per year. As I mentioned, there was some initial hydrogeology work that's been done, showing the benefit to the basin and how much water the basin could potentially take, but there's some additional studies that are required or needed to be able to identify what are going to be the impacts to seawater intrusion and also the existing nitrate contamination in the Moro wells or the Moro Valley subbasin, excuse me. So that's kind of the project definition. So what are the specific elements? So I broke the elements of the project. They're really broken down into three specific packages. One is the WRF package, which includes the demolition of the existing wastewater treatment plant site, and it includes the wastewater treatment plant itself, the facility out at South Bay Boulevard. Then we've got the conveyance facilities, which are essentially either one or a several raw wastewater lift stations that would take the raw wastewater that currently goes to the existing site, and it's going to pump it to the new site on South Bay. What goes along with that are pipelines to be able to connect those two sites, one going to the new site and one coming back, bringing back brine from the advanced treatment process or wet weather flows from back to the ocean outfall. And then there's also a recycled water offsite component. Essentially what that includes are a series of injection wells or a number of injection wells that would be used to pump the treated water into the ground and then the infrastructure to be able to get that treated water from the new treatment plant to those injection wells. So just a couple of recent activities, and these activities go back to about the last 6 months of the project and things that are currently ongoing. After the high cost of the project was identified with the completion of the master plan and the master reclamation plan and the draft rate study, council gave staff direction to put together a public works peer review, and essentially that had several public works professionals from the area, public works directors, folks from PISMO, the county, and other agencies came together and did a peer review of the current direction for the project. As a result of that, the South Bay Boulevard site was confirmed as the preferred project location. And as a result of all that work, the project goals were updated at that point in time. And then on the procurement side of the house, the city hired a design engineer looking at and doing the design work for the conveyance facilities, the pump station, the pipelines to carry the wastewater to the new wastewater treatment plant. That's Waterworks Engineers who was hired there. And then obviously the city's also taken on the procurement process for the design build team that's going to be designing and building the WRF out at South Bay. The draft EIR has been recently published, and the city council just recently hired Carollo to serve as a new project manager for the program. So in terms of next steps, as I mentioned, Waterworks was hired to do the design of the lift station and the force main, the raw wastewater force main. That conveyance design is currently ongoing. The city is considering a number of different grant and loan opportunities, low-interest loan opportunities, and that's ongoing effort as well. As I mentioned before, some initial hydrogeology work, some look at the groundwater has been done, but some initial work is needed to look at the design of the potable reuse system. Very soon, the city and staff is going to be reviewing and evaluating the WRF proposals from the design build team. There's two proposals the city is anticipating. Very shortly. And as a result of that, the next step would be to negotiate and award a contract to one of those teams for the design and construction of the treatment plant, and then certifying the final EIR after that.
Just so the record's clear, those next steps aren't necessarily in order because the certification of the EIR actually going to come before the contract is awarded.
Thanks, Joe. And with that, as we mentioned, or Scott mentioned when we first started the discussion, we'll soon be getting more information about the true cost of the project with the proposals that are going to come back from the design build teams. And as a result of that, the city will then be able to update the rate study with some more accurate cost estimate numbers. And there's a number of different reviews that have been identified for that document. One is a Blue Ribbon Commission that's going to be assembled with a number of folks from the community of Morro Bay. Staff review by city staff, advisory board reviews, and then ultimately city council reviews. With that, I'll pass it to Joe, who's going to talk a little bit about the Prop 218 process.
Thanks, Eric. Thank you all for coming to this important meeting. As you know, Prop 218 was a voter-approved initiative because the voters felt that they wanted to have some control over fees and taxes that their local governments and state government would impose. And actually, water, wastewater, and refuse fees are exempt from most of Prop 218, but the Supreme Court determined that because those kinds of fees, water, wastewater, and refuse fees, trash collection fees, are what are called property-related fees, that they still, although they're exempt from most of Prop 218, there still has to be a protest vote that a protest opportunity for the voters to consider. So what that means is the city has to first determine what they think the rates should be to cover whatever the project is that's going to be completed, all the capital costs and all the maintenance costs. And once that determination is made, then the council needs to send a formal notice to all parcel owners and customers, the actual rate payers. So a notice will go to all the parcel owners and all the customers of record that the city has. And 45 days will pass, and all of those people who get that notice have the opportunity to submit a protest. And the protest will have to have specific information on it. The notice that will go out will explain all this, so you don't need to take notes now. The notice will explain what information you have to provide on the protest if you submit it, when you have to submit it, where you have to submit it, and all that kind of information. If 50% plus one of the people who can vote choose to protest, then the rates can't go forward. But the thing to remember is, think of a condominium or a common interest project that has, we'll say, 20 condo units. Each condo unit is a parcel, so each of those people will get notice. And let's say we have, and each of those votes will count as one vote. But let's say there's an apartment building where there's 20 units. It's one parcel, and there's 20 customers. But only one vote is considered per parcel. That's, again, under Prop 18, the way Prop 18 is written. So although there may be, for that example, one property owner and 20 apartment dwellers, only one vote will count that's submitted as a protest. So in essence, that sort of allows more opportunity for protests than technically could apply because the parcels are what are considered, but it's going to be anyone who lives on the parcel as a tenant, as a customer, can submit a protest. And if the protests don't meet that amount, then the city can go forward with the rate structure that's approved by the city council.
Thanks, Joe. And Mr. Packard.
Good evening. My name is Harvey Packard. I work for the Water Quality Control Board in San Luis Obispo. And the city has invited me here to provide some information and answer questions. I want to point out that the chair of the Water Quality Control Board, Dr. Jean-Pierre Wolf, is here this evening also. The executive officer, John Robertson, is not here, but he has asked that I represent him and the board here today. I don't want to go over too much of what's already been said, but I do want to point out that the board does have several roles in this process. Our first and foremost role is a regulatory one. The board sets the rules that the city has to comply with as it discharges wastewater into the ocean. And those rules are contained in the permit that Joe Miller has referred to. Second, the board acts in facilitative roles also, and encouraging roles. And in this case, we have been encouraging the city to maximize the recycling of wastewater. And we encourage all of our municipal wastewater permit holders to do this, not just Morro Bay, and especially the permit holders that discharge to the ocean. We feel that they have a special opportunity to take wastewater that would otherwise be unused or wasted and reused for beneficial purposes. So as has been mentioned, the old plant has to be either repaired with major upgrades or replaced, either of which would require a Coastal Commission permit, and they've said that the plant must be moved. We are encouraging water reclamation for various reasons, primarily because of the advantages that it will provide to the city through water portfolio diversity and security. With climate change and demonstrated by the recent drought. In fact, there was a new study this week saying that overall precipitation in California, probably the overall amount of precipitation we get probably won't change all that much in the future, but there will be significantly more and longer dry periods and more severe winter storms. So making sure that water purveyors have a secure and diverse sources of water is very important. State water deliveries are not all that reliable, as we found out recently in the drought. Recycled water used for groundwater recharge will allow the city to use this wastewater for potable uses. The groundwater recharge will help clean up the aquifer, as been mentioned. There are nitrogen impacts caused by farming in the Morro Valley. It could potentially keep seawater intrusion out and will, as I mentioned, provide a drought-resistant water supply for the city. The Water Board does not tell the city how to comply with our permit and the water quality rules in that permit. However, we're confident that the city, in this process that we've been keeping a close eye on, has taken good faith efforts to do a good planning effort, and that these proposals that they are talking about are satisfactory to our board. Our board will hold the city to a very strict schedule as it goes through with this rebuilding process, and is prepared, in fact, to consider enforcement actions if necessary. So the board is watching this very carefully, and we'll be keeping a close eye on it in the next few years as the city progresses.
Thank you, Mr. Packard. With that, we can move on to the question and discussion portion of the evening. That concludes the formal presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Is that loud enough for my voice? Let's try sticking it up higher. Thank you, Mr. Collins. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming, and thanks to the panel for giving us their time this evening. I'm Marilee Hyman, co-president of the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County. This evening, I have the pleasure of directing your questions to this panel. I'll have the help of our League team. We have two question sorters, Neil Havlick, the table, and Ann Havlick, who is my co-president, and two runners who will collect your questions. Shelley Higginbotham, will you raise your hand, please? Where are you? Shelley? Oh, there she is, and that's the card. And Susan Devine, where are you, Susan? She's in the middle of the back. So either of these people will be glad to collect your questions. We'll continue to collect them over the next hour. And there's one right there. Look at that. Any others? Just raise it high enough so they see you and can make their way to you. We try to sort your questions by categories to avoid duplication. About half of your questions so far, and that's 24, deal with cost. The big concern for tonight, I don't know that we can answer your cost questions. I think they indicated that's a future meeting. I bet you'll be at that one. You may direct your question to any member of the panel by name, and other panelists may answer and give more information if they choose. If the question is general, any one of them may volunteer. If nobody volunteers, by default, the city manager, Mr. Collins, will answer the question or direct it to a panelist. This is a fact-finding meeting, so we don't have a timer, but we do ask that the answers of the panelists be complete and succinct so we can get to as many of your questions as we possibly can this evening. I may ask a follow-up question to yours if I think it would add to the understanding of the answer they gave. I apologize in advance. Our time limit probably won't allow us to get all your questions answered. But we're fortunate. The folks here, most of them, have volunteered to stay a little bit longer after the meeting to answer your question directly. We thank them for that. But before I ask the first question, because I had 20 more minutes to help sort, I will take a quick 3 minutes break, so you can stand up, stretch, get a drink of water, and come back in a couple minutes, and we'll start refreshed. Thank you. For a first question having to do with siting of the plant, I'm going to read four at the same time because they're similar, but just a little different. I don't know who will handle this, but it comes down to if other communities like San Francisco and Santa Cruz can have their sewer plants down by the waterside, why can't we? If the lift station can be built at the existing site, why can't the new plant be built there? If sea level is rising, how can the city permit any large permanent structure, such as the Holiday Inn, at that location? Do you get the gist of these questions? Who would like to field that? Mr. Leivick?
I'll give it a shot.
Thank you.
So the first question is, how can other communities keep their facilities at the near the ocean side where Morro Bay can't? The process that Morro Bay went through was we applied for a coastal development permit to reconstruct our facility. The City Council issued that coastal development permit, and that decision was appealed to the Coastal Commission. There has to be a project for the Coastal Commission to act on, a project before the Coastal Commission for them to act on it. Many existing facilities don't have projects right now that are in front of the Coastal Commission. There's a recent project at South County Sanitary District in Oceano that went before Coastal Commission. They were given a time schedule to move their facility when they issued a permit for some maintenance upgrades at the facility. How can a lift station be permitted there? There's a difference between a lift station and a full treatment plant. If the lift station is much smaller, especially is envisioned through our design engineer, Waterworks Engineering, it will be flood protected. And if a lift station gets inundated, let's say if there's a tsunami or a flood that inundates that lift station, it's a much simpler process to rehab that lift station than it is a full wastewater treatment plant with the various treatment processes for secondary process, where you have a tank full of microorganisms that need to treat that wastewater. Reactivating that is a much more difficult process than getting a lift station up and going after a flood. How can anything be built on that site? Well, we don't know what will be built there, if a Holiday Inn or it'll stay as open space. I think much of the area in our proposed general plan is open area and visitor-serving commercial, but I'll leave that to more of our planning experts. We can go through with our general plan update. But what Coastal Commission was concerned with was essential public facilities there. There is also a difference between a wastewater plant that serves the entire community, and let's say it is a hotel there, than a hotel serving a private enterprise. There's a much higher level of responsibility for essential public facilities than there is for private development. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leivick. As a follow-up, because it seems to be that the Coastal Commission has a lot to do with this decision, question is, what was the basis for the Coastal Commission decision? Coastal Commission, Mr. Packer? Yes, what was the basis for the Coastal Commission decision? There's nothing further.
Let me clarify that I don't work for the Coastal Commission. I work for the Water Quality Control Board.
That's true, you do. So who would be the best person?
I'll give it a shot.
Mr. Leivick? All right.
There were the Coastal Commission. I don't have the Coastal Commission staff report in front of me, so I can't quote it verbatim, but there were several reasons that were cited in that staff report for denial. Coastal hazards was one of them, and then inconsistency with Coastal Act policies relating to visual resources, inconsistencies with land use, and like I said, coastal hazards such as coastal flooding due to the stream and tsunami, sea level rise. The Coastal Commission decision is referenced on the city website should we want to read it in detail.
How many pages is that?
I don't know. It's pretty thick, you know, ish, a couple inches thick, was their staff report.
Thank you very much. We have more questions on the siting. It's mostly, why not leave it where it is, pretty much. The peer review group was clear in insisting the plant be located at or near the current location. How does moving the sewer plant 3 miles uphill make any financial or engineering sense? So we're getting into a little bit of the cost question, but do you want all three questions at once?
Sure.
All right, we'll try for it. A city councilman told us recently that the Henson site, one of the 17, and a portion of the adjacent Lila Kaiser Park are outside of the FEMA 100-year floodplain. Why can't we build the new plant there? And why not maintain the plant in its current location and pipe the secondary treated water inland to a small plant outside the city limits where it can be treated to a tertiary level and then stored in the wetlands or used for irrigation? So people are still talking about, have you decided the site? Is it a for sure?
The site is the council preferred site. We cannot make a final decision on that until after the environmental document is certified. So we do have a memorandum of understanding with the property owner. Should we move forward, we have agreement to terms of purchase, and basically municipalities can't pay more than appraised value. Otherwise, it's considered a gift to public funds. But if I get that wrong, Joe will slap me and correct me on that.
So the site is still up for question based on the EIR and that whole process?
It is, but it is the preferred site. We were directed to move the project inland. We did look at a number of sites, 17 to start with, ranging all the way from up in the Toro Valley, out the Moro Valley, Choro, the CMC site. This seemed to be the site with the least amount of issues with it. Yes, it is uphill from the existing treatment plant, but almost everything is uphill from the existing treatment plant. It is also outside of the coastal hazard zone, and consistent with the county local coastal program. Wastewater treatment plants could be constructed according to the county local coastal program in that area. Why not keep the existing plant there up and pump that secondary effluent to another plant to treat it for tertiary? We don't have a plant that can treat to full secondary standards there. It wasn't designed to meet current secondary standards. In fact, for flows above 1 million gallons a day, they have to bypass the secondary process, and we have a blending valve that would blend primary effluent, or basically settled effluent, with that secondary effluent and discharge to the ocean.
Thank you. We know this has been a long process just to get down to your preferred site, but I'd like to fight one more time for the folks who don't want your preferred site. I think there are a few out here. Is there any chance, what percent chance is there to change at this point in time from this preferred site? Or should we just say, okay, let's work with it? I know your city staff. You can't make decisions. It's your council people that are going. You have to lobby for this. But anybody want to take a sense of this? I mean, should these people continue to say, "I don't want that site. Change it"?
Everyone is entitled to say whatever they want to say.
Yes.
However, the city is bound by certain regulations in how the council can make decisions. The council can't choose any specific site and say, this is the one we're going to buy, until the environmental analysis is completed. The environmental analysis needs to have a site for the environmental document to focus on in order for it to be able to have any useful analytical tools. So the EIR that's been drafted, that's now available for public review, is using the South Bay site as the site, the preferred site. It discusses possibilities of alternatives, but it doesn't come up with any alternatives that are better than the current site that's the preferred site. If indeed the council in the future, when they were given the EIR and after they certified the EIR, decided, you know what, we don't want to do it at that site, we basically would have to start the process all over again, almost from the beginning, from the EIR perspective.
And you have 17 possible. How much is it for one EIR about?
About $300,000.
So you can take that into your consideration of rejecting this EIR. We have some permit questions. Was that clear, that about $300,000 to do one EIR? Can the city modify, upgrade the existing plant to comply with the NPDES permit without triggering the need to obtain a coastal development permit?
I'll try that again. Development under the Coastal Act has a very broad definition. To modify the existing plant, something has to be constructed out there. And I believe in anybody's definition of what development is, construction of a material object is development under the Coastal Act. So give you an example of what might need to be constructed. We only have one secondary clarifier that doesn't have a capacity for the full flow. We would need to build a second secondary clarifier. We discussed this. I've been on this project since I started with the city in 2007. And we discussed this a lot in previous versions. How could we do something that didn't trigger a coastal permit? And we never came up with a method to modify the existing plant and not trigger the need for a coastal development permit. I don't know that there's a way to do it.
I was just gonna follow on real quickly with an example that I believe Rob mentioned earlier, which has to do with the South County. Their current project, there is not necessarily a driver there for improved effluent quality or increased capacity. What that has to do with is the lack of redundancy with some of their key process units out there, like the secondary clarifiers, like their trickling filter. Morro Bay would be in a very similar position. And again, any of those improvements to even correct those redundancy problems, even if there was no consideration for increasing the effluent quality, again, that would trigger a coastal development permit. So again, there's not really a way to be able to do that without triggering a coastal development permit.
Thank you. There's a redundancy question to follow up what you mentioned. Is redundancy built into all processes and systems at the existing plant in the event of a failure? Will the new WRF have completely redundant processes and systems?
I can answer that question. In regards, I'll let Joe handle the existing treatment facility part. Maybe I'll touch on the new facility. This Joe. But in terms of the redundancy elements for the new treatment plant, all critical infrastructure will have redundancy. Under the current project definition, the city does have the luxury of being able to discharge treated effluent to the ocean. So, for example, any processes that are absolutely critical to being able to meet the bare minimum or the effluent quality requirements that are dictated in the city's NPDES permit to be able to meet those secondary effluent limits and that secondary effluent quality for water going to the ocean, those will definitely have redundancy built into them. Where the city has a little bit of flexibility has to do with some of the advanced treatment facilities that would be used to produce the potable reuse effluent. Because if there is some type of process upset, that water could be, rather than having expensive, redundant advanced treatment facilities, that water could just be sent to the authority at a treatment quality that could go to the ocean. You might not necessarily have to have the same level of redundancy for those process units.
Thank you. This is a quick question. Has the authority to issue a coastal development permit at the existing site reverted back to the city?
I don't know the answer to that question, whether the authority ever was taken away from the city. There was an appeal to the Coastal Commission on the permit that was issued by the city. The Coastal Act allows the Coastal Commission to take permitting authority over any major public works project. I know that there's a lot of concern in Santa Cruz about where we would be constructing this facility. And my assumption, I think it'd be pretty good assumption, is if we attempted to permit a facility at the existing site, Coastal would take the permitting authority over that site.
Thank you. Does the city have the authority to issue a coastal development permit for the new site at the South Bay site?
No. It's outside the city limits. It will be permitted under the county's LCP, and we'll be processing permits through the county's San Luis Obispo. We're still working on the transition time. The county does not want to take the treatment plant process all the way through the permitting requirements. They want to turn it over to us once the land use permits have been issued. So we will probably need, we'll need to go through the annexation process to annex that into the city so that the city can issue building permits. The county will issue land use permits. The city will issue building permits on the site.
Thank you. What specific enforcement infractions is the Water Control Board considering? Mr. Packard.
The board has a variety of potential enforcement actions that could be used at this in this process. The NPDES permit has effluent limitations that are backed by enforcement authority. And there's a couple kinds of enforcement authority there. There are certain effluent limitations that a violation of which would incur a mandatory penalty. In other words, the Water Board has no discretion. It has to issue a penalty. And the penalty is a minimum of $3,000 per violation. However, the maximum penalty for each of those violations is $10,000. So the board would be required to issue at least a $3,000 violation, but has the discretion to increase that to $10,000. That's for each violation of effluent limitations in the permit. In addition, the city and the Water Board signed a settlement agreement, I believe in 2006, that requires the city to take this project up. That settlement agreement includes monetary penalties for failure to meet the schedule. Those penalties can be up to $1,000 per day of violation. It's important to note that when the Coastal Commission denied the permit, the Water Board agreed to hold that schedule in abeyance. The Water Board could at any time decide that it's time now to enforce that schedule. So that's one of the things that they'll be keeping in mind.
Would you guess what would trigger that change?
I can make some guesses, yes. If the city decided on a course of action that would delay building this new plant beyond what is as short as possible, the board could view that as a deliberate violation of the NPDES permit, and I suspect they would be very interested in taking enforcement at that point. And I want to point out that when I talk about a decision of the city, I'm talking about the city in broad terms. That could be an action by the city council, either the current council or a future council. That could be a decision of the general population through a citizens' initiative or through a Prop 218 vote. So all of those the board would view as an action of the city. The board has additional actions that it could take. There are water code provisions for a cease and desist order. The board could impose upon the city. The board could, in that cease and desist order, put in new milestones, violations of which would incur penalties up to $5,000 per day. So those are all things that are within the discretion of the board and are potential violation or potential enforcement actions that the board could take if the city were to fail to meet the requirements to build a new facility.
Thank you for all the bad news. What is the projected lifespan of the new plant? You don't have one yet or built one. But what are you shooting for?
The design horizon, I believe, is city build-out, 2040. But there's many components. Our existing plant is 65 years old. And there are components there that have been replaced over time that continue to operate. But there's old concrete out there that has aged that needs to be replaced also. There are steel structures out there that need to be replaced. I think it depends on what the component is and what it's constructed of and the what its maintenance frequency is. Pumps, motors get replaced regularly. I would say that it's almost, this new site is the forever site of the city's wastewater treatment plant, and happy to let anybody else expand upon that.
So with good maintenance, we don't want to face another $150 million project soon, right?
That's correct.
Thank you. What is the capacity in terms of population or number of connections or hookups the proposed new sewer treatment and water reclamation plant designed to serve?
12,200 people is the population that it's designed to serve.
And what are we now?
Just hovering around 10,000.
And what is your
10.5-ish?
And what's your projected
growth cap?
Yeah.
12,200.
To be reached when?
I think we project 2040-ish, but at our current growth rates, I'm not sure we'll get there by then. And that was that 12,200 was based on an initiative process that set a growth cap, and it was before my tenure at the city, but basic reading of it, I believe it was resource-based because of limitations of water supply in the city.
Thank you. How will the citizens benefit from the reclaimed water? And where will it be used? Mr. Leivick, you're carrying the heavy duty.
As the project is envisioned now, the reclaimed water will be treated to a level that will allow potable reuse. Right now we're looking at indirect potable reuse, so it would be injected into the Moro Valley groundwater basin, stored there, and extracted as we need it. We are a state water customer. We're going to be on state water for a while, probably till around 2035. But state water is not 100% reliable. Since I've been here, we've had 5% years where the state says they can only deliver 5% of the water available. Now, we purchased a drought buffer, the city did, when they signed on for state water. So anything around 30% delivery, we get 100%. But when we start dropping below 30%, we cannot guarantee our water supply. And when it's a 0% year, as was predicted for this year, it did go above that. We have 15% deliveries this year. A 0% year means zero times our allocation, means zero water through the state water project. So we need to provide all our water locally. This project benefits us in providing water security. We need more than one source of water for Moro Bay. We can't rely on only state water. We do have a desal plant, that's true, and I'm sure that question might come up. That desal plant was built as an emergency project in 1992, I believe. It needs major work for that to operate on a regular basis and be dependable to supply the city's water supply.
How much does it cost to start up the desal plant? Is there a startup cleanup?
There's components in there that are need to be replaced. Electrical was installed, it looked like, in a hurry because it was an emergency project. That all needs to be redone. The pressure to desalinate salt water, it's run through an RO process, kind of like the RO that's under your sink, except at a much higher pressure. Those pressure vessels are 30-plus years old.
What's RO?
Oh, excuse me, reverse osmosis. The tank, pressure tank that's under your sink, and then some filters, very fine pore filters that the water gets pushed through, and the...
I don't think we need all the detail
okay,
on that
sorry.
One. I think people are more interested in what does it cost to...
To rehab? Joe
some kind of cost.
Will help me out on this one.
Yeah, so the water desal plant truly hasn't ran since the late 90s. And like Rob said, those vessels are, you know, a time-life item. They're 30 years. It didn't matter if we ran that plant every day for 30 years or basically it sat idle for 30 years. Essentially, what we have for infrastructure there is some piping and some electrical. You'd be looking at pretty much a full plant rebuild.
Which would run? Anybody yeah. have a yeah. guess on this kind of... Cost?
Yeah, so it would be well in just the venture to guess, you know, 20, 30 million, you know, plus a full plant rebuild down there. You also are going to run into the Coastal Commission concerns with upgrading that facility.
Thank you. That's just a ballpark is what I was looking for. I'd like to change direction to the 218 vote. There have been a few questions on that. If the 218 results in a majority of no votes and fails, what happens next?
The city won't be able to impose the rates that were suggested, and that means that there won't be funding provide for payment of the WRF, if that's what is ultimately chosen. And other than those factual things, for sure, I am not sure what the next step would be. The next step would be is that the city would then have to talk with all the regulators, and hopefully the regulators wouldn't take that act as an act that causes them to think the city's not being serious enough and therefore impose their enforcement, as you heard could happen, it would be a situation that I would hope I wouldn't have to deal with.
Thank you. I don't think you can directly answer this because we don't know the costs yet, but there is a concern. Is there still a chance of working and sharing costs with Cayucas? Anyone have a crystal ball? Know anything we don't know?
As we've heard from Cayucas, their project will be funded through USDA financing, which has a population cap on it. Were we to combine a project with Cayucas, we would exceed that population cap, and they wouldn't get their funding for their project. We've been told by their general manager that they're not interested in losing their USDA funding on the project. Could there be another way to build a treatment? It's always within the realm of possibilities. I don't see a less expensive project by combining with them, given that we want to make beneficial use of the reclaimed water to best benefit the city's water supply.
Thank you. I'd like to go to funding. Will we lose the low cost, and I'll use the initials, WIFIA and SRF funds, if we delay? What else can be done to lower costs? And will the WIFIA loan be granted if there is no recycled water attached? Someone take the loan question? Why aren't you giving it to the city manager? He's been awfully quiet.
Still learning. Can everybody hear me? Is this working? Yeah, sorry about that. So the WIFIA does provide, this is the U.S. EPA. We were one of 12 very fortunate jurisdictions or agencies that were submitted kind of letters of interest to apply for WIFIA funding. Low interest subsidized loan funding for major projects up to 49% of the costs. 40 plus agencies submitted letters of interest. We were one of 12 selected. We've been working in earnest with the administrators of that program, a very new program that passed, I believe, legislation passed in 2016. Really trying to assist cities like ours that are, you know, don't have a lot of extra funds lying around to do major improvements that are necessary to provide the basic services to our community. So we're fortunate to be in this position to be considered for low interest funding up to 49% of the project. And if we secure that, then it's more than likely that we'd be able to secure the rest of the financing through the state's SRF fund. They tend to work together like that. There is no hope of a WIFIA financing without a reclamation component to the project. They are not looking to provide this limited funding to projects that just meet the standards. They're looking for innovation. They're looking for folks who are going to lead the way for the rest of the country. And they realize that comes at a cost. In order to do reclamation, it does add a lot of cost to the project, and that's why they're looking to fund those and help subsidize that increase from going from your standard plant to a reclamation plant. It really brings that cost down to the ratepayers ultimately. The WIFIA, we went out to D.C. in March and met with the EPA administrators who oversee this program. They do provide flexibility in terms of when we can submit all the necessary documents as well as rates to secure the loan. So we're fortunate that we have that. We do need to submit an application in July. We need to submit a fee. Of course, they want their money. And I believe we have to have a credit rating to go along with that. So those are kind of the immediate things that are required. But we do want to maintain our position We don't want to slide in terms of the other 40 that are 30 or others that are really interested in getting that position. So there is urgency to get everything ready and as quickly as possible. SRF, we have to have everything lined up before we can apply. We need to have our rates. We need to have the EIR completed. I believe we have to have permits in hand as well. Rob, correct me if I'm wrong. So there's more things that need to be tied in, but they don't have necessarily a deadline. They're more of a revolving fund, so you can apply basically any time. But the sooner you apply, the sooner you're going to get word back from them that that you've secured their funding. But WIFIA is kind of opens the floodgate, if you will, for other financing, as well as other grants. I mean, really what we want are grants. And some of these grants may come as we move further into the project. We can't predict what's going to happen. Rob mentioned the USDA loan or grant opportunities. We're looking with the Bureau of Reclamation, the Army Corps of Engineers, and we'll also be going to Sacramento as well to see if we can get Prop 1 money or other funding opportunities, because we realize without doing that, this project is well outside the realm of possibility for our community. I realize even with those, it still stretches most folks in the community. So I hope that sort of answers the question. There is flexibility, but we do need to maintain the timeline we're on to make sure we don't lose our spot in line.
Thank you. Do you have a lobbyist?
We do. Ferguson Group, we met. They were helped facilitate the meetings with all those agencies I just noted in D.C. We're able to get us really good meetings with high-level administrators as well as line staff who do the real work. And it was very, very favorable meetings. It also got us to meet with Feinstein as well as our Carbajal and other folks who maybe can't help immediately with funding, but they certainly can make recommendations or requests to those agencies. And if we need legislation to help with us with it, potentially the USDA loan to look at that cap on our population, that they're willing to roll up their sleeves and do that work for us because they understand that this project is very expensive for Morro Bay.
And how's your credit rating? You mentioned it. That'll make a difference.
Credit rating is difficult to determine when you have no debt. for the water and wastewater enterprise funds. So we will be working with a financial consultant and a rating agency to determine what that credit rating is to submit to the EPA. The EPA requires basically three things with the application: the credit rating, a check for $25,000 to cover their review costs, and then also our draft EIR documents that they'll use to prepare the NEPA forms or the national forms that are equivalent to our California CEQA process. They'll be preparing that information.
One of the important factors that come into play with the rating is making sure there's a revenue stream to pay for the debt service that would be applied. So that goes back to the rates.
That means us.
Yes.
Thank you. Question on growth. If the city does build the water plant and can produce 80% of our water needs and has annexed the new site into the city, what will keep the city from growing beyond this 12,200 arbitrary number? What will keep it from growing to 50,000 people? Is the sewer plant a growth factor?
Well, the plant will only be designed to treat the wastewater from a population of 12,200. It would have to be expanded. The property that's going to be annexed is about 25 acres. There's a flatter area. Don't want to say flat because I don't think there's any part of that site that is actually flat. And then mostly a hillside there. The property owner doesn't want to sell us a piece of property that would basically create a lollipop parcel in the middle of his. So we would likely buy a corner of the property. The city has a certain growth boundary existing, the city limits. And there's not a whole lot of vacant land within the city limits that would support using the questioner's number of a population of 50,000. There's just not that vacant land. It would take a annexation outside of the city, and there's that would have to go through a public process for that to occur.
Thank you. Many Morro Bay citizens think the South Bay Boulevard design will be too expensive. They're struggling to pay their present sewer bill. Are you aware the California Coastal Commission has a new policy that will allow design waivers based on economic hardship? Is there such a thing?
I'm not aware of that.
Anybody? We'd like to know more. Somebody? Let the information out. Oh, Eric, you're here. Mr. Howell? No, just a moment, please. We have a member of the Coastal Commission here. And we'd be glad to have you, Mr. Howell. So cross that off your list, wish list. Thank you. Next question. This is pretty simple, I think. Hasn't the city approved a Prop 218 vote for $75 million? Yes or no? Mr.
Couple years ago, the city did a Prop 218 vote for a project a rate that would support a $75 million project that Cayucas was part of. As the logic behind that was to get our rates pointed in the right direction. We didn't have a project description at that time for a project or a fully developed project at that time. I know that people probably maybe have missed this on the rate announcement, but there was a section in there that talked about if the project could not be built for this amount, we would need to come back for additional rate increases. Yes, so there is a existing rate in the city of Morro Bay that would support a $75 million project or maybe $72.5 million project. I'm not recalling exactly what it is, but Cayucas was part of that project so that our share was somewhere in the neighborhood of $56 million. And we're accumulating those funds. That money is coming in and going into the sewer accumulation fund. So we are, we do have a balance in there. And any amount in the accumulation fund will be used to pay down debt. We're not going to borrow a cent more than we need to develop this project.
So this question is related, and maybe you answered it already, but did the council ever ask staff to propose a project that could be funded by the 2015 218 rate increase?
My recollection is council asked staff to look at alternatives to developing the full project and what the cost would be to do a secondary-only project at the South Bay Boulevard site. I'm not remember exactly what the cost is, but it was upwards above $110 million, I believe, maybe $120 million. And the issue became We'd be unlikely to qualify for subsidized funding. Therefore, the kind of the out-of-pocket costs because of the higher interest rates would be very similar to build, or maybe even more than building, a full tertiary advanced treatment that provided indirect potable wastewater at the subsidized rates.
Thank you. I'm sure you'll get these cost questions again when it comes down to the real figures. Do you want to know more information about the weighted votes for a 218, or do you want to wait for the full information from the city on the 218? Can you nod or shake your head? I have a question on, you know, what your vote weighs for. We do have time. Okay, you can go till 8:30 the whole way. Please explain how many votes and who can vote when a person owns their own home, one parcel, multiple single-family residences as rentals. I can't read the next word, by tenants who may or may not pay for water.
Pursuant to Prop 218, the people who can lodge a protest are the owners of the dirt and the customers who are required to pay the water and wastewater rates. If the apartment building has one meter and the meter, the bill is paid by the landlord and the landlord owns the dirt, then that landlord can vote and the landlord could only have one vote because the landlord would be both the property owner, the dirt owner, and the customer. If the apartment complex had 20 units and there were 21 meters, one for all of the non-tenant use water, and meters for each of the tenancies, each of the apartment units, then there would be 21 possible votes, and only one of those 21 would need to vote no for that parcel to be cast as a no vote.
It's all or nothing?
Yes.
Did that answer the question? Thank you. How is the Blue Ribbon Committee being selected?
I can answer that.
Thank you.
We have an exceptional group of Morro Bay residents who have volunteered, will volunteer a lot of their time to look at the cost of the project once we have more information back on the proposals received. And then the next phase is looking at the rates and all the different variations that we could pursue, including how the subsidized loans and potential grants would factor into that, and do everything we can to put forward the least amount of rate increases possible to fund the project. I reached out to folks who I've got to know in the 5 months that I've been here who have demonstrated either keen business or finance acumen, who also have been here for a long time, who have an understanding of the project and are concerned about what it will do to our community if it's not affordable. So those are kind of the factors I use to help select the individuals for the Blue Ribbon Commission. And very clear from the beginning that this is independent. They'll be provided the information and they can ask questions and we'll provide the answers, but it's going to be their own analysis, their own review, and their own conclusions, not mine or staff or the rate consultant.
You are the sole decider?
It was a city manager appointment, yes.
To appoint the Blue Ribbon Committee.
That's right. So they're serving sort of at the behest of the city manager. They will provide their independent review and recommendations to city council-appointed advisory bodies. So not sure exactly how many of them will review this, but anticipate at least the wharf, at minimum the wharf citizen advisory committee, potentially the citizen finance advisory committee, and probably the public works advisory committee will all review not only staff's work, but the analysis of the Blue Ribbon Commission, and then all of that, again, will move forward to City Council. So you have three layers of review as opposed to two.
Are you open to volunteers?
We have an amazing capacity in this community for volunteerism.
And so anyone here in this audience could say, me? Would you consider me?
I have four exceptional individuals that I'm very comfortable with that represent a broad range of interests and perspectives on the project. That's what I looked at, and I'm comfortable moving forward with those individuals.
Thank you. Yeah. This is a question on the rate study. Will the rate study cover the cost of everything? And they listed everything needed to get the WRF up and running, such as the lift stations, piping, demolition, consultants, injection wells, and so on.
That and more. We still have to operate the rest of the system. We have to maintain the rest of the system. We have employees that will need to pay. So the rate study will be all-inclusive for the entire sewer fund, not just the construction of the new wharf. So components in the rate study will be the wharf project and its ancillary facilities, the conveyance system to the wharf, the pump station pipelines, the injection system, the cost of maintaining our existing system, the repairs that need to go on each and every year that need to be made to the system, our operations staff, all in on the rate study.
Thank you. We need to look at the remaining questions for a moment to see which ones would be most wanted by folks, other than, I'm sorry about the cost part. I disappoint a lot of folks. They already answered that.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. The answer is no. They don't want it.
Okay, I don't know.
It's a fair question. Okay, so I got too small. Thank you for the short break. Two small questions. Has LAFCO or the county indicated they are interested in allowing the annexation of the South Bay Boulevard site?
Yes.
Thank you. Do you have to return money to Cayucas now that Cayucas won't benefit from the new plant of the 2015 Prop 218 rate increases?
Cayucas wasn't a party of the rate increase. We can only have our rates only cover the ratepayers within the city limits, not Cayucas.
Thank you. Those are the two short ones. I saw it in your brochure. I went up on your website and looked at the literature that you had available to people. But somebody wants to know, what is the time schedule order?
I can try to answer that one. The NPDES permit that was adopted by the Water Quality Control Board a few months ago that went into effect in March as has been stated already, includes requirements for full secondary treatment. The plant as it exists cannot meet those requirements.
Okay, that's good.
So the board has or will shortly issue a time schedule order, sometimes referred to as the TSO, that will shield the city from mandatory penalties due to violations of that permit. So it's a regulatory way that's allowed for in the water code to give the city a break while it builds the new treatment plant. It's called a time schedule order because it includes a time schedule. So the city has to meet certain deadlines, and the final deadline of full compliance with the secondary treatment standards in the permit. So as long as the city is complying with the schedule and making progress, the board will not issue the mandatory penalties.
Thank you. There's more information up on your website on timing and the other upcoming schedules that you'll be facing. Can you describe how the RFP process works, and when can we expect the results?
I'll explain that a little bit. the city is the procurement process for the design build team is a two-step process. And so first, a request for qualifications was sent out for design build teams to submit their statement of qualifications. I'm trying to recall exactly how many statement of qualifications came back. It was a total of four. The city then decided to move forward with the second phase and invite all four of those firms. All four of those firms made the shortlist and were invited to submit a proposal and respond to a request for proposals. That request for proposals included the procurement documentation or the procurement documentation that explained to the design build teams more detail on the project. What was required in their proposals in terms of level of design, cost information about the evaluation process. Mm-hmm. Proposals, the city is expecting two firms or two design build teams to submit complete proposals. Those proposals are due on May 8th. In terms of the timeline after that, I think everybody's very excited to get those. But in terms of the next steps, it's going to be likely several months until there's a decision that's made on the selected design build permit. Something comes to council. It's just depending on how similar the two proposals are, how easy they are to evaluate. It's going to take a little bit of time there. But they're due on May 8th.
Just want to add a little to that. We cannot issue a construction contract until a couple of steps are met. We have to have a certified environmental document before we can sign a construction contract. And then we also have to have a method to compensate the contractors should we issue a construction contract. So we have to have a successful 218 in order to sign a contract.
This is a bit accusatory. Why was the current RFP written with incentives to builders that build expensive projects instead of those who build lower cost projects for communities like ours? Did you weight it in any way?
I can answer that a little bit, and then I think Rob can follow on a bit. And the project is a large project. I don't know about the way that the actual RFP was written, but in terms of the size of the project, there's really only a handful, I'd say. There's probably about a dozen general contractors out there that build these types of projects that could bond a project of this size. I don't know if there's anything specific in the RFP off the top of my head that would limit who could propose on the project, but it's a bit of a self-selecting process when you have a project of this magnitude and complexity. There's only certain contractors out there that we run into in the industry all of the time that specialize in the construction of these types of facilities, and also ones that can bond a project of this size.
Thank you. Mr. Leibig?
The project did have a requirement that the contractor design build entity had examples of projects that were $80 million anywhere in the U.S. They could have provided an example of a project. And that is because we have a very large project that we're proposing there. We needed to ensure that a contractor would have that bonding capacity to construct a project of this size.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you. This is a cost question, but it's a present cost question as opposed to what you're looking at in the future. Why is the city and city council discussing another water and sewer rate increase when the most current rate structure, 2015, still has two more annual increases in 2018 and 2019? I think people are just looking at everything going up. Anyone want to field this one? Mr. Leiber?
Sure. The project that was used to support that rate increase was, like I said before, for the city of Morro Bay, a $56 million project. To get a loan, you have to show, at least I did when I got loans, that I could pay back the entire amount, not half of the amount for the loan. So we have to show an income stream into the wastewater fund that retires that entire debt, not $56 million of a project that we're estimating at $150 million. Now, I will admit those are very conservative estimates, and we're anticipating something lower than that as we move forward, but we need a rate increase that will cover the entire cost of the project. We need a rate income stream that will cover the entire cost of the project, not half of it.
Thank you. This is, again, a present cost issue dealing with leaking pipes. Why hasn't the city fixed the leaking sewer pipes? And the second question is, leaking underground sewer pipes have been identified for many years are polluting the groundwater. Why hasn't the city repaired or replaced these lines with money approved in 2015?
The city repairs sewer lines, maybe not on a daily basis, but quite regularly. I'm going to have Joe give a little bit more details on this. The question might be about the Main Street line. It's one of our larger diameter lines. It has some pretty substantial issues with that line. The project was tied when we were looking at a project out the Morro Valley. Was tied to a wharf construction out there because we would be doing a lot of construction in that area. It made sense to tie those together. Now that we're looking at the other end of town, we can decouple those projects and repair that Main Street line really at any time, and we're proposing to do that once we have a CIP program looking at the entire collection system, and Corollo Engineers is helping us develop that CIP program. Capital Improvement Program. Thank you, Joe. CIP stands for Capital Improvement Program. The issue with leaking underground pipes polluting the aquifer. I know that sewer lines leak, and there may be some seepage out in the aquifer or out into the soil that surrounds the pipe. Our investigations working with the regional board showed that the nitrate contamination in the Morro Valley is due to upstream agriculture, not leaking underground sewage pipes. We would have to leak almost all the sewage that goes into the treatment plant to achieve that level of contamination. Not to say that that's a reason not to fix the pipes. We still need to do that repair, because my major concern is not sewage, the seepage of sewage out of the pipes. It's the inflow of water into the pipes that we need to deal with. It's a more important, critical issue.
Yes, Mr. Packer.
Yeah, let me just add that the Water Board agrees that the leaking collection systems are a problem and need to be fixed. We did agree with the city. We allowed the city to delay the fixes on that Main Street line while there was some discussion or uncertainty about where the plant would be and what would be happening along that street. Now that it appears they can go forward with that fix, we're encouraging them to do that. As Rob mentioned, the Water Board did look closely into the issue of whether leaking sewers could have been causing the contamination in the well field across Highway 1, and we, based on review of our geologists in our office, dismissed that as a possibility.
Thank you. I have this related cost question for now, and then the last question for the end of the question period. So this and one more question. Can the city continue to support the water discount program and work to increase the fund on behalf of low-income residents?
Yes.
Mr. City Manager.
Yes, I'll answer that one. There you go. City Council adopted their goals and objectives for 2018 earlier in February, and one of the items that was brought forward unanimously by them was to look at expanding the utility discount program. We're one of only two in the entire county that provides a discount program, as far as I know, and very few that do it in the state. And the reason being is you can't use fees to subsidize. You can't use rates to subsidize ratepayers. You have to have another source of revenue to do that. So some cities use fines or other things that aren't related to rates to help pay for that. And that's sort of our approach at this time. It's not a very extensively used program, but it does offer a 10% discount for those who qualify. Those are lower income means. What City Council is owed from staff is a review of that program, a review of its use, kind of a review of if we better promoted that, what the expectation would be, and what kind of what we would need in terms of revenue to help pay for that. And I think City Council is also looking at potential other sources of revenue to maybe go beyond the 10%, maybe to a higher percentage subsidy, because we know there's a lot of folks in this community who rely upon Social Security or very limited income. They might own a home, but don't have a lot of income. And a $100 rate increase or whatever it may be could force them to leave the community. I mean, this is a real concern. And council acknowledges that, and that's why they want us to look very closely at that program, because that could actually make the difference. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you. And the last question has to do with flooding. Is there a danger we could overfill the aquifer with recycled water and cause flooding? You're thinking?
I'm not thinking. I'm just the quick answer is yes, we could do that, but we won't do that. We can't. We're studying that aquifer. We've studied it a little bit. We need to study it a little bit more. But we would not pump so much water into that aquifer that would cause flooding. We would match either the capacity of the aquifer or our extraction rate. So we need to right size the injection facilities so that we do not cause flooding.
Thank you. And thank you for your kind attention this evening. You have been an outstanding audience, and we wish you well, the League wish you well, in your working together to solve these challenges facing you. And your mayor will let us go.
Can we give a round of applause to our League of Women Voters? So thanks again for everybody to come and submit your questions. We know that we have more work to do. We have the opportunity to have more forums and discussions as it relates to the WERF project. And council will take that on. Staff is working hard for us. So with that, we've concluded all of our questions, and we've hit the 8:30 time spot, and we just want to say thank everybody for coming, and we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you.